Is open. Good morning, everyone. I've got a public hearing on chickens and eggs. First, I want to get some business out of the way and vote out Senate Bill 80 and 2734. So we'll start with a work session on Senate Bill 80. Do you want to refresh us, go through page by page what this does?
This is a very slim amendment. The dash four, it's only, I think, lost a page or two.
This is like the 100 and some odd page one?
Yes, well, two some, yeah. And this Senate Bill 80 basically rearranges the and deals with the idea of alignment of the bonding and the different ways that you deal with those bonds, since the Board of Higher Education has went into a different direction and almost or does cease to exist. There was a movement of putting things either with different responsibility and especially with the state. Now this adds the HEC, or the Higher Education Coordination Council, as one of the entities that take over after all that is shaken out of the reformation of the higher education system. So that's what the dash three, I mean, sorry.
So we're abolishing, among other things, the statutes related to the chancellor, the State Board of Higher Ed.
Right.
And slimming government down.
Question to staff, Mr. Chair. Mazen, what's the date on the A4? Since we didn't print, we're saving paper in our environmentally friendly committee. What's the date on this A4 amendment?
The A4 amendments actually came on about a week ago.
6/8/15. Hey, we're in a work session, Mr. Chair, are we?
Yes.
All 287 pages of it.
Is it 287 pages, really?
Yes.
Mr. Chair, I move the A4 dated 6/8/15 with all 287 pages into the primary bill.
Senator Boquist moves the fours into 80. Discussion? Objection? Seeing none, so ordered.
Mr. Chair, I move SB 80 as amended with a dash 4 to the floor with a 2-pass recommendation.
Senator Boquist moves Senate Bill 80 to the floor of the Oregon State Senate with a 2-pass recommendation. Discussion? Seeing none. Objections? Seeing none. Senate Bill 80 moves to the floor of the Oregon State Senate with a 2-pass recommendation. Since I was involved in Senate Bill 270 and in the education roots of this technical bill, I will carry it, and I'll close the work session. Thank you, Mazen.
This calls for a drink, Mr. Chair.
And many thanks again to Dan Gilbert, who I know is out there, who's spent the better part of a year on this issue. I'm going to open up a work session on House Bill 2734.
House Bill 2734. The C version, as it comes to you, was discussed. Just to refresh your memory, this is the building the land bank for the brownfields and allowing that land bank to be established by local government and given it authority and how it is led and dissolved and so on. And also allows it and allows the local government to issue bonds and also have those bonds tax-free, and at the same time has the dissolution process. And one of the most important things is that, you know, the land authority will acquire land, but in the same time not necessarily inherit the liability. This was, I think, discussed yesterday, so all the other discussions, there are no amendments at this time, and we have all the paperwork.
Mr. Chair, in order to achieve greener fields, I move House Bill 2734C to the floor with a 2-pass And Senator Bertschinger is going to speak to my motion.
Senator Boquist moves House Bill 2734 to the floor of the Oregon State Senate with a due pass recommendation. Discussion, Senator Bertschinger.
My only concern in this bill going forward, and I'll be voting for it, is that we're not giving the same opportunity for the private sector as we're giving for the public sector on dealing with brownfields. And I just wanted to put that on the record because that's the part that I have some heartburn with, but not enough to keep me.
Okay, thank you. Further discussion?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, we won't let indigestion get in the way of good policy.
Further discussion? Are there objections to House Bill 2734? Seeing none, House Bill 2734 moves to the floor of the Oregon State Senate. Senator Roblin requested that he be the carrier, so without objection, he can carry this bill. And we'll close the work session on House Bill 2734. Thank you for your patience in getting that business out of the way. I will open a public hearing on House Bill 3125, and I believe that's Kyle.
Well, Kyle, nobody is really leaving the room, so Mazen can clear it. This is all your responsibility then.
I am able to draw a crowd more than Mazen on occasion.
That's where we remember the 6-11 days.
Yes. So good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 3125 is a bill to expand an existing property tax exemption, the one related to qualified machinery and equipment used in food processing. And so what the House Bill 3125, the A engrossed version, would do, and I'll get to, we do have a dash A9 amendment, and I'll get to expand on that in just 1 second, but the underlying bill, the A version, would expand the existing exemption for the machinery and equipment used in food processing to include machinery and equipment used to process grains. It would modify the definition of food processor to include grains, and it also excludes a person engaged in the business of producing any product that contains marijuana or marijuana extract from being able to qualify. It does require qualified machinery and equipment used to process grains to have a real market value of at least $100,000 when placed in service in order to qualify. It allows the State Department of Agriculture to fix, assess, and collect or cause to be collected fees on food processors in the amount necessary to cover the cost of certification, and it requires the State Department of Agriculture to submit a report on the impact of expanding the exemption to include grain processing to the Interim Legislative Revenue Committees not later than September 15, 2018, and it would apply to property tax years beginning on or after July 1, 2015. So that's this upcoming property tax year. And just as kind of a little background, the way that the existing exemption works, and this one would work as well after if the bill were to move, is the State Department of Agriculture has to certify the property, and they request is done by the property owner. So they would request to the Department of Agriculture to come out and certify that the equipment is food processing equipment, and that's generally done. The Department of Agriculture's deadline for the request, at least, is at the end of February. So with this changes applying to property tax years, this upcoming property tax year, we've already passed those initial deadlines. So there would be a late filing fee for the exemption that's filed with the assessors, but it also require for property to receive this exemption this upcoming property tax year and going forward. There's going to have to be the Department of Agriculture will have to get out there and certify this stuff much more quickly than they would otherwise have to do. So just so you're aware of that. The dash A9 works within the same framework of the bill, more or less. It would include bakery products, dairy products, and eggs to the list of food processors qualifying for the existing food processing machinery equipment. So with the A9, it would be the new equipment that would qualify to be grain, bakery products, dairy products, and eggs. Those terms, bakery products and dairy products, are defined, or they're at least pointed to other statute where that is defined, so that's in the A9. And it does require qualifying bakeries to have been issued a wholesale license by the State Department of Agriculture, and also prohibits the exemption from applying to machinery and equipment used to process bakery products if the proceeds from the retail sales made at the processing site constitute more than 10% of all proceeds from sales at the processing site. So it really is directing it to aim more at the wholesale bakeries. And like I said, the change in the A9 would also apply to tax years beginning on or after July 1st, 2015.
All right, we have a fiscal on the underlying bill of $50,000 to $90,000. Do we have a fiscal for the A9?
We do, Mr. Chair. Let me
just... That is the A9.
That is the A9.
I believe the figures, the difference between the A and the A9 is there is a fiscal for the Department of Revenue in the A9, where in the A, the Department of Agriculture still expects some certifications, whether it's just the grains or this expansive language. And there is, that's where the Department of Agriculture does have the ability to assess fees to cover their costs. And the report that the Department of Agriculture would submit in 2018 would now include grains, bakery products, and so forth. So it would include all the products within the A9. So they would submit that report in a couple of years that would describe the changes that have happened since expanding this exemption.
Okay.
Question to staff before we start.
Senator Bobus.
I make sure I understand what Kyle just said. You're saying under the A9s, or we'll just use the A9s as an example, make sure I understand, is that the Department of Agriculture would incur an expense of between $50,000 and $90,000 in order to certify a local property tax issue. And are you saying that then the Department of Agriculture already has, or this gives them fee authority to charge a fee to recover the $50,000 to $90,000 from those people who want to get a property tax exemption at local government? Is that correct?
That's correct. Right now, Department of Agriculture doesn't have that fee authority.
But this bill, someplace in here, they...
Yes, that's in the underlying the engrossed version. Yes.
Wow. Okay, second half is, of what, if I understand what you're saying here, is DOR separately from that, then will incur approximately a $65,000 fiscal for some similar thing, and how did they recover their $65,000?
Senator Boquist, there's nothing in statute that would allow them to assess a fee or anything to cover that.
Okay. Got it. Thanks.
All right. Let's call up our first panel here. Ian Tolleson, Pat Shannon, and Dirk Davis.
Brian.
Back in a second. All
right. I don't need that. I can yell loud. Use my fist.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, good morning. My name is Ian Tolleson. I'm the Government Affairs Director for Northwest Food Processors Association. We represent food processors in Washington, Oregon, and Idaho. Our members process milk, fruit, vegetables, seafood, nuts, variety of crops that we get from the Northwest farmers. We come to you in support of the Dash A9s. The original base bill would include grains, eggs, dairy, and bakeries, and they were removed in the House, and the Dash A9s adds them back in. But I just want to give you a little bit of history here. In 2005, the Oregon legislature first started the food processing exemption, and this was pretty important. At that time, the Oregon's food processing industry was really going through some trouble spots, and the legislature first entered this property exemption for fruits, vegetables, nuts, seafoods, and legumes. In 2013, the legislature again extended that to 2020, and I think the main reason why that was done is it was seeing the benefits of what the food processing industry brings to Oregon. 2005, it was really a great time for this piece of public policy to be enacted, because right after that, of course, we started in the recession, which took a huge hit across the country. It's important to know that food manufacturing, food processing in Oregon was the only manufacturing sector that did not take a decline in jobs. We grew jobs. And we put that in large part to this property tax exemption. Food processors have the ability, unlike our partners, the farmer, to be somewhat mobile. And in fact, states across the country, they really do what they can to try to get our business. And this food processing exemption, which was directly catered to our industry, really helped maintain and grow jobs here in Oregon. And you saw that through the increase of those numbers during the recession. We feel that the expansion to these four other industries takes a tested and tried public policy and expands it to these other industries. Now, I passed out to you a news article from over in Idaho, and I really urge you all to take a look at that. About three or four pages in, it lists all the food processors that have been to Idaho in the last 3 or 4 years. Many of those are bakeries and dairies. And I think it's incumbent upon us in Oregon to really take a look at the policy and say, you know, why isn't that growth happening here in Oregon? Coincidentally, I just returned from Idaho last night. I was there for 4 days with the Oregon or the Idaho legislature and their policy makers. And I was talking to a person who works for the Idaho Department of Commerce. And I'm new to the food processing industry, so I was asking her questions about, you know, what is the reason for this growth? And it is amazing the response I got back of what sort of policies they are enacting to bring processors here. They have a similar equipment tax exemption that lasts for 15 years. They have another exemption that allows food processors to have their income tax abatement for another 10 years, I believe, once they meet a job number. They have a variety of policies there that attract our business. And I think that's great for Idaho, but I'm from Oregon. I love it here. We have many members here, and I would like to see our industry continue to grow here. And our plants in the Northwest, they are old and they're aging, frankly. We've been here for a long time because we have ties to the agricultural community. And our equipment needs to be replaced. We have in the association an energy reduction goal of 25% in 10 years and 50% in 20 years. And we're on track to meet that. But the machinery and equipment in our food processing plants are very expensive. And when you have to buy multiple ovens or multiple processing equipment for dairy, it gets very expensive. And when other states are grabbing their business, such as Idaho or Washington, in the case of the business and occupation tax preference that we anticipate to be extended in the next coming weeks, I think this is a small but very important thing Oregon can do to really invest in this industry. Our jobs here are well over minimum wage. We have a variety of benefits throughout all of our processing plants. And I'm always amazed of each tour I take of the longevity of each one of our employees that stay in these plants. So, again, I urge you to pass the dash A9s. This will add back dairy, bakery, and egg, and will really help rejuvenate those sectors into a policy package that's trusted and tried. Thank you.
Good morning, gentlemen. My name is Pat Shannon. I am here actually in two capacities today. One as an employee of Grain Millers, which is a large oat milling business down in Eugene, Oregon, that started in Oregon back in 1986 and actually has grown now to be the largest oat milling operation in North America with about 9 different facilities all over North America. But it wouldn't have started if it hadn't started as a small micro business here in Oregon, taking over a mill that was around since about the 1920s and has been completely rebuilt many, many times. And it's at the point now where we really have no way to expand it further. My second capacity is I'm a board member of United States Bakeries, one of the largest and actually third largest family baking businesses in the country, with market share that goes across the western United States. United States Bakeries, I believe, is one of the largest food processing employers in the state of Oregon. And in another interesting situation, been here for decades around the 1900s, but is at a point now, particularly in the Portland area, where we just can't grow anymore. We have to expand that facility as well. Both businesses are going to require greenfield operations. We cannot expand the current footprint any further, and our biggest decision is where do we grow? The economics point to a number of factors in our oat milling business. It may be Alberta, Canada, because that's exactly where the oats are grown. But Eugene, Oregon is well positioned to be able to serve the natural food industry along the West Coast. So a big decision within our company is, do we move this new facility to Alberta? Do we keep it in Eugene? Do we move it down to California where many of our customers are? For United States Bakeries, our largest investment right now is in Nampa, Idaho. With the bakery, we've expanded there partially because of some of the incentives in the Idaho state. And we're trying to decide, can we keep this facility in Portland? Do we keep it in Oregon? Do we cross the river into Vancouver? Do we take it up to Chehalis or Tacoma? So lots of different decisions that we're making. I come from a career where I ran the Agribusiness Council of Oregon for many years. I also started my own business as a product developer for the commercial baking industry. And in that business, we actually added a facility in Arlington, Oregon, a mixed facility, with the help of some of state incentives. And that was one of the main reasons that we built that facility here in Oregon, and it remains in operation today. Also started a small specialty bakery in Portland, and it's expanded many times and is now in a new facility in Tualatin, Oregon. Started another business, which was a high-tech blending facility for the baking industry. They started in Lake Oswego and expanded into Wilsonville and is now a very large facility in Wilsonville. All of my businesses were purchased by outside companies, one from England and one from Minnesota and Cargill, but they left those operations in place. As a small business in Oregon agriculture, they grow into larger businesses. My companies that we employed over 200 people that started from scratch, basically zero, in 1986. And there's many other, I think, examples of Oregon agricultural businesses that grow and provide tremendous jobs in Oregon. U.S. Bakeries and grain millers is well over the minimum wage. Provide tremendous benefits, have sick leave benefits, have 401ks, have many retirement benefits. They're very, very good jobs. Both USB and grain millers during the recession grew. And one of the axioms in agriculture is everybody has to eat, regardless of whether there's a recession or a depression or the good times. So in our businesses, this kind of incentive program will help us make a decision whether we're going to locate here in Oregon, along with other factors, but it's certainly going to be a very important factor in helping us decide whether we keep these businesses here or whether we expand in other locations. And I don't think we're alone. I think the dairy industry is in the same position. I know the bakery industry is in the same position, and that's why I'm coming to testify to you today that I think not only for other food processing facilities, vegetables, fruits, and whatnot, but the majority of the agricultural industry should benefit from a program like this to help us locate our businesses here in Oregon as well. So thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
Good morning, gentlemen. My name is Dirk Davis, and I'm the CEO of Sunshine Dairy. Had that opportunity to be the CEO for the last 2 years, but we're a 79-year-old company. The Caramontis family started the Sunshine Division in 1936. We have 111 employees, 78 of them are union, 33 are non-union. We're about $50 million in revenue. We're fourth generation. We support over 200 restaurants, 12 hospitals, 8 retirement centers. We cross business. I'm really proud of this. We cross business in the state of Oregon with Willamette Egg, Oregon Freeze Dried. We're supply chain partners for a national product that is produced here in the state of Oregon and retailed throughout the country. Harry's Fresh Foods, which sells to Costco and others. Stumptown Coffee, which is regional and now expanding national. Reese's Fine Foods, we supply products for them. Pacific Foods, Lactalis, which is a cheese company, Sorrento, Ventura Foods, a great Salem-based company. We co-pack with companies like White Wave Foods, So Delicious in Eugene, which also then uses Snow Temp as part of their transportation. So you can see from a Sunshine standpoint, it's not just about making milk and sour cream. It's the reach that we have across all the businesses and the impact that we have on all of those jobs. So for us, in starting our 80th year, the family at one point made a decision to not reinvest in the business. And I'm faced today with the opportunity to take a brand which has been in the Oregon market for 80 years and continue it to grow. One, because I have a responsibility to 111 employees to do that. And the opportunity that we have is to create more relationships like this, but I need equipment to do that. We're in a position right now where we need to make a lot of investments. And quite frankly, I don't want to come here and tell you that I want to move to Idaho or the state of Washington. We're in Oregon. We're one city block in Oregon in Northeast Portland, and then over off of Northeast Halsey. We've got two processing plants. So for me, I would have to close both of those. If I can't reinvest, we'll spend another $20 million to go rebuild somewhere else. And if we did that, there are probably other places that we would go to do that. But I want to reinvest here, protect the jobs that we have here. And I want to support the charities that we support, Meals on Wheels, Sunshine Division, the Oregon Food Bank, De La Salle High School, Portland State University. I read a lot of your bios, you know, over the last few months that talk about promoting job growth and advocating for small businesses and to hire Oregonians. Well, that's what we do at Sunshine Dairy. We do all of those things. It's our responsibility to give back. So today, again, I need to reinvest in our business, in equipment, in new equipment, so that this brand can be here for the next 20, 30, 40 years, so we can have the fifth and sixth generation. So with that, we ask you to support in adding, again, businesses, dairy, eggs, bakery, because we all cross over and we are all adding jobs, and we need your support. Thank you, gentlemen.
Questions of this panel? Senator Bertschinger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, I think the timing of you bringing this bill to this committee is kind of ironic. Yesterday I talked on the floor about what has happened this session and how we have burdened the agriculture community with more mandates everywhere from sick pay to all these things. And I think a lot of people don't understand, I do because I come from agriculture, is that, you know, you have a small margin at times. You're dealing with perishable goods. You may be dealing with interstate, so you're competing with companies from other states, or you may be on the world market, you're competing with that. And when we keep putting these burdens on you, you are going to think about doing something else. I understand that. And I, you know, this bill kind of lessens a burden. You know, I don't know if it's going to offset all the other stuff we did to you this session, but I certainly understand that. And I hope people take note that at some point in a business, if you're not making a profit, you'll be out of business. It's that simple. So I think the timing of this is quite ironic. I mean, I hate looking at it as an offset of all the other stuff we've done to them, but basically that is how I'm looking at it. So I hope people take note of what is happening in our agriculture sector where people are actually thinking about leaving the state.
Senator Riley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a comment. I appreciate what I heard from you folks about how you treat your employees. I heard that you have above minimum wage, you have health insurance for your employees, and I think we need companies like you in this state who care for their employees and take care of them. Not everybody does that. and we really appreciate those who do. So, thank you.
Senator Buckwitz?
No, thank you.
Senator Edwards?
Okay. Thanks for standing, Eugene, with your new plan.
You guys could shine some light on what happened in the House. This bill was tailored back a bit, and I know not to ask you to get in the heads of legislators, but can you, from your perspective, diagram what happened?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, thanks for that question. You know, I think we had a fundamental difference of opinion, which is fine in this building. It's healthy for the democratic process. And unfortunately, we had some industry sectors left behind. Now, I don't want to try to, you know, speak for other legislators or try to get in any one of your guys' heads. That might be a little bit dangerous for me. So I'll probably just leave it at that. I thought we made a really good case for why the inclusion of all four of these industries is important. And I would just like to add, this is simply a five-year tax exemption. It is small. On that sixth year, when this equipment comes back on the tax rolls, it's at a 70% value, which is a pretty good rate. And this is expensive equipment. So while in the short run, the concern of local governments losing a little bit of revenue in the beginning, I think they are well made up for it. For the investment in their property values will increase. We will keep jobs there. We will grow jobs. We will expand the people that are taxed. And I think it is well recovered once this property comes back on the tax rolls. And I just want to make sure that is important, because we live, work, recreate in these communities, and having strong schools, roads, all that stuff is very important. And we feel that being able to continue to operate successful businesses and provide these jobs will further that goal that we all want to see achieve.
I do have one real question. for each of you, what's the expected life of the equipment that you are going to add in each of those industries?
On the grain milling side, there's two. We have obviously our infrastructure that could last for 100 years. Mm-hmm. These facilities are built for nuclear bomb explosions. I mean, these things are gigantic facilities that are very well built. The equipment themselves could last 30, 40 years. But at this point, because of all of the new equipment that's coming along, the advancements in being able to move faster, be able to reduce our energy usage, be able to reduce our water usage, to be able to reduce pollutants and control dust, all of these things, the equipment has expanded so fast with technology that we need to replace this equipment every 4, 5, 10 years in order to keep up. And that's not the whole line, but that is many of the big pieces of equipment that you would need to use. Our kiln, for example, could last for 50 years, but other equipment we might need to replace every 10. To build a greenfield facility like we have to do for both businesses, both our bakery as our mill, they're $80 million facilities, 60 to 80, sometimes $100 million. So they're behemoths, and they create a lot of jobs just to build them. But once we're there, you know they're there to stay, because they're so expensive you can't really move them out of the state. So to answer your direct question, it could be varying from 5 years, but typically the expensive equipment we need to buy could last for 20 or 30 or 40 years.
Senator Riley, for us right now, we need new boilers. I need new trucks. I need new fillers. I need a caser that's $410,739. Had my meeting on it yesterday. We have new IS infrastructure, wastewater systems. So for us, again, my situation is unique, as all of them are. This family has been in the Portland area for four generations. The last real big investment was probably 25, 30 years ago. So I've got boilers that are that old, and the new boilers, much smaller footprint. But Pat's right; these are probably, 7 to 10 year pieces of equipment for us. Some will last longer, but somewhere in that range. You know, and the goal for us, you know, I gave you some revenue numbers today. I'm confident that we can double that business in the next 3 to 5 years, so we'll need more than that.
Mr. Edwards.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For either of you, what type of numbers are we talking about in your businesses in terms of like your property tax bill? Is it tens of thousands a year, hundreds of thousands a year, millions a year? I'm trying to get some sort of perspective. You said $80 million to build a new state-of-the-art mill. I don't know how much of that's equipment, how much of that is that the labor and the construction costs and all that sunk stuff that you'll never get back.
Right.
There's no, you know, salvage value to or anything.
Thank you, Senator. I can tell you with our facility, you know, it's about a third, third, third. So you build the land with the infrastructure development. We need to put in a rail spur. Those are all very expensive infrastructure builds. About a third of that is the facility itself, just to be able to hold the structure, and about a third of that is the equipment. So, and that equipment is very specialized equipment, highly computerized, highly refined. So it's equipment that we source from all over the world. But as we were talking about earlier, our engineers are local, our designers are local, our architects are local, our construction company is local. So when we build this facility, it's not just impacting Gray Millers, it's impacting hundreds of jobs around us in this state that are needed for building this facility.
So we're with talking the bakery, like hundreds of thousands.
Yeah. Hundreds of thousands would be from the equipment side, you know, millions, but the tax exemption,
yeah.
I guess if you're
the
asking
taxes,
directly
yeah.
what that would mean, it could be hundreds of thousands of dollars for us.
Okay. Thank you.
So, Senator, we'll probably we'll spend somewhere in that five-year period $5 to $7 million, and it's about a 2% each year. So another 100,000. Again, mm-hmm. I'm a small guy. So that's big. And what I'll do with that is that allows me to reinvest in other things, reinvest in people and more systems mm-hmm. and other equipment. So it'll perpetuate that.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. There are some concerns raised on the amendment and the bill, I think, from the Department of Revenue and others. So I'm going to call them up next to see whether these are concerns that can be resolved or not, and so that the people following the department can perhaps address those. So Mark Garst, can you come up, please?
Chair Hass, members of the committee, for the record, Mark Garst with the Oregon Department of Revenue. So the bill was well explained by both the proponents and Kyle. The goal is to expand the existing food processor's exemption to grains, bakery products, dairy products, and eggs. And then it also refines a little bit of the criteria on how equipment can qualify. The department's neutral on the bill, but we did have some issues with some of the language that we found made it a little confusing and could make it difficult to administer. As was previously discussed, the House Revenue Committee took this up, and we made these same comments at that time, so they shouldn't be too new. So starting off, the language on page 1 of the dash 9 as modified would say that the food processor means a person engaged in the business of freezing, canning, dehydrating, concentrating, preserving, processing, or repacking for human consumption raw and fresh fruit, vegetables, nuts, legumes, grains, bakery products, dairy products, eggs, or seafood in any procedure that occurs prior to the first point of sale by the processor. So in the way that we've been administering this, previously we've said that only the first processor is able to take the exemption. And that when you expand it to bakery products and dairy products, that could get a little confusing for us because the grain will be milled at a location like Grain Millers, and then it'll go to a bakery. So now you've added a secondary processor who would actually be getting the exemption, and it really doesn't go along with the way that we've been administering it previously. So, and then on dairy products, it's a similar thing. You might have, you know, a cheese manufacturer who they may process the milk initially, or they could buy separated raw cream from another processor. And so you would just have this situation where instead of just the initial processor, which was the initial bill, it kind of would, people could qualify all the way along the line. So we just wanted to bring that to your attention. That's the way that we've been administering it previously, and so we might have to take a look at that. Similarly, on page 2, when you're talking about the qualifying equipment, it says that it can only be used in primary processing, and that it includes both the real property and the personal property. So typically, we think of bakery as a secondary processor, again, for the same reasons. And for some of these dairy producers, too, you know, the initial milk pasteurization, we can see that as primary processing. But then when you take it and try and turn it into yogurt or cheese, we feel like you've kind of entered secondary processing. And so we would have some difficulties administering that language if it was written this way. I think that the initial food processor's exemption was targeted more at stuff coming directly from the farm. And so, you know, I can see that if you wanted to enact this policy, maybe it would be better if it wasn't tried to shoehorn into the existing language, but rather you kind of created an entirely new exemption that looked at it differently. So a couple other small issues. Department of Agriculture doesn't really have the expertise to value the equipment, and so this will add a criteria that the equipment has to be worth more than $100,000. So that will require some work on the Department of Revenue to insist on that or to assist in that. We're not entirely clear if the $100,000 is supposed to be per item of machinery and equipment or if it's supposed to be the total investment, and I think that language could be clarified pretty easily. And it would be much, administratively, be much more simple if you just said cost or total investment. And so if the cost, what they had spent, was more than $100,000, that would be easier than when you bring real market value into it, because that's something that people can argue about whether it is or isn't worth a certain amount of money. So we would encourage just those two changes to, if it's the total that you're after, clarify that. And then just to make sure that cost would be simpler for us. Additionally, we're not entirely clear which agency is supposed to. There's some language in there about 10% of total sales being retail sales being another criteria. We're not sure which agency is supposed to look at that. We're just assuming that that's something that the Oregon Department of Agriculture is going to look at. But the language doesn't specify whether that's something that's supposed to be looked at annually, what type of information the company is supposed to present. So that's something that could be clarified. And then finally, as Kyle explained, it's going to be administratively difficult to actually enact this for 2015 because they've already gone through the process over at the Department of Agriculture. So this is going to require special trips, and I'm not saying it's impossible, but it is going to be administratively difficult to get it done before the end of the year and before value starts to go on the roll. So those were our comments.
Okay. Questions? Sure. Senator Bocas.
Just clarification for the record. I think the fiscal says something around 60 to 80 or 60 to 120 processors. But what we're really talking about here are industrial properties, because they're valued above $1 million, and that's why DOR is involved in the assessment of this across the board. Is that not correct?
Primarily, yes.
Okay, thank you.
Further questions? Thank you, Mark.
Thank you.
The League of Oregon Cities.
Good process.
Chair Hess, members of the committee, my name is Wendy Johnson, here on behalf of the League of Oregon Cities. The League opposes the Dash 9 amendments. Property taxes are at about 1.5% because of the Measure 5, the $10 and $5, so it's 1.5%. So just take, for example, the $1 million, to answer Senator Edwards' question, how much we're talking about. If it's $1 million improvement, that would be about a $15,000 property tax. So it's not hundreds of thousands. A million would be $15,000. 8 million would be $120,000. This tax exemption is all on local government and schools. So I don't think we've talked about the revenue impact, but that is available on OLIS. It would literally triple this property tax exemption and what it would do for schools and local governments. It's like 4.9, I think it is, or 4.5 a biennium, just adding this group. I want to state clearly that cities support economic development, and we want more tools to bring businesses and jobs to Oregon, and we can be supportive of expanding this list. But we want to maintain that it needs to be done carefully. Right now, this This does not have any sideboards. It's just if you have this type of product, you get this exemption. And we don't see that that ensures economic development. We recognize that cities and counties are in competition with other states, but we don't think it should always be on the burden for economic development on local governments. The example of Idaho itself offers many incentives, but that are not local government incentives that are on their backs. Rather, it's state grants of money, state income tax, grants, land gives, all those types of things. That's why it's perhaps more attractive to go to Idaho. This just puts the whole burden on local governments and schools. But that's the system we have here. And so if you are to go forward with adding to this list, we'd like some sideboards. As it's written, it just doesn't meet the but-for test. Some of the testimony submitted from the food processors talks about wanting to upgrade or make it more energy efficient. Well, this doesn't require any energy efficiency or any upgrade. It just, if you produce this, it's in the processing line, you get the exemption. So it could be a piece of equipment that just wore out and you're replacing it, or it could be a new business coming in. We'd be very supportive of the latter, but not of the former. I mean, why should this business be treated any differently than another business? I mean, we want economic development, more jobs, expansions, bringing business, but this is just an odd list, frankly. We understand why it came in 2007, because the food processing business, especially fruits and vegetables, were in crisis. So they gave an exemption, but they didn't put any sideboards on then. But that doesn't mean we shouldn't now. We believe that if you made it a local option, which the egg exemption that's in existing law is, that would at least give us some discretion to figure out, okay, is this business going to move? Can we use this as a tool to get a business here? Is there an expansion? We would prefer that. That's in existing law. The egg exemption is about to expire. But this amendment would bring the egg exemption from the local option into the general list, which doesn't have that requirement. An alternative way to try to put sideboards on would be to actually provide criteria, put a jobs requirement, put a minimal threshold. Frankly, the $100,000 was what we did get in the House on the grain piece, but that is literally usually one piece of equipment, as was testified before. So that's not guaranteeing an expansion, nor jobs or anything. There are other alternatives for food processors to use in existing law without having this special carve out. There's the E-zone requirements that work for many of these food processors. There's the bill that this committee passed out just last week, Senate Bill 938, that applies to industrial improvements. So that would apply to many of these if they have at least a $2 million improvement. So there are other tools. This doesn't seem like it has sideboards, and it doesn't ensure economic development. This committee, as part of the tax credits committee, is very judicious with tax credits, and so we'd ask that this committee be just as judicious with property tax exemptions, because it's just the same burden, but it's now on local governments. The revenue loss with the present exemption is $2.4 million of INM, roughly. This one would add, for the 15-17, another $4.5 million. So that brings it up to, you know, almost $7 million. The tax effective rates in Oregon, as the industry's own report shows, are actually some of the lowest in the country for businesses, and so we just don't see that this is the incentive that's needed. The Ernst & Young reports that look at the states always put Oregon at the top of business tax effectiveness. It's one of the lowest, so we just don't see that this is necessary. We know that we need tax incentives, and we have some, like the enterprise zone and things, but we just think this needs some sideboards, and therefore we respectfully ask you to not take in the Dash 9 amendments. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Senator Boquist.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, as you know, Wendy, I'm not real fond of the Ernst & Young and all these out there, but however, you raised two issues that I think you could explain slightly more, or I guess get the city's position. 938's designed to cover the category from 2 to 25 million. Because there's a gap in our ability to promote economic development in rural Oregon. Not that Portlandia is rural, but it still would apply. You talked about that. Do the cities and other local governments, if I recall correctly, you have the $25 million upward in either the SIP or the gain share. What's the city's position in using those sorts of tools to assist food processors on a local basis?
Chair Hass, Senator Boquist. The League has supported the SIP gain share continuation. Both that incentive obviously is the only one that has some with the state putting some money back into local governments for locals giving up property tax exemptions. That's literally the only one. But that requires a very large business coming in, $25 million or $100 million. So that's why Senate Bill 938 had the $25 million cap, because we're missing anything below that. Many businesses aren't that large. And so Senate Bill 938 would provide a discretionary property tax exemption for industrial property. For improvements on industrial property, it would be a local option, just as the SIP gain share is, but it gives local governments that negotiating power to bring in a business or help a business expand should they choose. It's all focused on local option, and you know, cities and counties want jobs and they want growth. Our base is property tax. It just doesn't make sense to provide a property tax incentive to a business that's here, especially providing food that for the people that are here. I mean, they're not going to move into another state to provide local food if it's a food processor that's producing food to be distributed nationally. That's a different story, and those are going to be a bigger business that will probably fall into one of the other categories. It's just that this is overly broad and doesn't have any sideboards.
Thank you for the questions. Thank you. Greg Settrum and Mike Moran. Welcome.
Good morning. Thank you, Chairman Haas, and members of the committee for a chance to talk to you this morning. My name is Greg Satram, actually third-generation egg farmer. Our farm, Willamette Egg Farms, was founded in 1934 by my great-uncle. So we've been around for a while in the egg business. I want to talk just a little bit about, first of all, our own company, then a little bit about what's going on in the Northwest egg industry, and then how this bill is important to us. So we have about 215 employees, 165 of those here in Oregon, and about 50 up in Washington. You know, it's very competitive in the jobs market. We want good people, and we pay well above minimum wage, full health care benefits for all of our employees, and with very low copays. So very low turnover within our company. We believe having the best people is critical to producing the best products. About 70% of our business is the shell egg production business, and that is really not even an issue with this bill whatsoever, directly related. About 30% of our business is in further processed products, and essentially what we do is we're delivering shell eggs throughout Oregon, Washington, Northern California. And on a backhaul, we pick up as many eggs as we can buy from competing farms, most of those in Northern California. Those are eggs that are surplus or B-grade shells. And we bring these back here to Oregon for further processing. So those eggs are broken, pasteurized, and sold to food manufacturers primarily, but also restaurants. With liquid egg products. We're also hard cooking eggs, and that amounts to about 1 million eggs a day that we're actually, you know, taking through this further processed. I believe actually Senator Boquist was out to the farm here a couple of years ago, so he saw that firsthand. Our egg breaking machines are 25 years old. We're actually replacing one of them simply because we need the additional capacity. Clearly, you know, 25-year-old machines are hard to buy parts for. We need to make some investments on our further process side. This bill, I think, is critical non-directly in some ways as well. And I want to talk a little bit just about where the Northwest egg industry is today. A couple years ago, we passed the egg bill, Senator Courtney's 805, and that was actually, you know, a bill that we supported. Oregon and Washington egg producers have taken the lead on the animal welfare issue in the nation. over the next 10 years, we're going to be implementing these changes. Essentially, all of our hens need to be American Humane certified. That means much bigger cages or cage-free. And, you know, it's a good change. It's actually something that we believe in as farmers, but it does create a very unique time in our industry in that we actually are going to have a chance to move. That's unprecedented, you know, in my lifetime. You pretty much, if your barns are in Oregon, that's where you're going to be farming, right? So over the next 10 years, we're going to have to take a very objective look at the best place to build these new facilities. Having remodeled chicken houses, I'm not a big believer in remodeling anymore. It's more efficient to knock them over and put up a new steel building. So we will be deciding where the bulk of our production will be over the next probably 5 years. There are some tax advantages in Washington. There are also some advantages sourcing grain. So, you know, that's what we're looking at. We actually will have the opportunity to move. We're an Oregon company. We love this state. It is a unique agricultural environment here. We really appreciate our partners that we work with you know, Farm Bureau. It's just we watch each other's backs here in Oregon. It's pretty cool. So we do not want to move. We like doing business here. So that's, you know, that's my message is, to some degree, this you know, we're seeing what the mood is here in terms of business friendliness is. This is a fairly small issue for our company. You know, the equipment, you know, it's the breaking machines are about $2 million. You know, this is, it's significant, but, you know, probably a B&O tax exemption in Washington is a much bigger deal for us. So, you know, that's where we're at. I do appreciate your time, and be happy to answer any questions coming up.
Good morning, Chairman Haas and members of the committee. My name is Mike Moran. I'm the general manager with Columbia Plateau Producers. We're a grower-owned company with growers in Oregon, Washington, Idaho, marketing under the Shepherd's Grain brand. All of our growers are dryland farmers on the east side of the Cascades. We have been primarily focused on wheat and flour products until recently, as that's pretty much what history has dictated for dryland farmers on the east side. But our group of farmers are all Food Alliance certified, and really are trying to engage in the most progressive, sustainable forms of agriculture. A big component of that is they're all no-till farmers. They do not till the soil. In order for that farm management system to work, they require really diverse rotations as well, in terms of the focus on soil health and regeneration. That being said, we have not engaged in processing in the past. We've always partnered with other partners in the milling industry, grain millers being one of them, ADM up in Spokane. But as we look at these other rotation crops, there is a lack of infrastructure and processing for some of the things that we would like to grow more of and to market. And so we're engaged in the process of siting and building a new processing facility for our growers. And so obviously one of the important decisions is where. As we've looked at our options, Washington and Oregon are our two most desirable areas. And really, Oregon is very desirable for a lot of reasons. This is a new operation, and so we're trying to figure out how to get it up and going. We're bringing in new product lines that we're not used to. This property tax exemption really puts a feather in the cap for making Oregon attractive. The challenge for us in the first 3 to 5 years really is developing these new markets for these crops and having anything that helps on a short-term basis offset as we build market share is something worth considering. As was cited earlier, it's not the decision, but it's one of the factors that we're looking at as we decide where to locate. We supply restaurants and bakeries throughout Oregon, Washington, the Pacific Northwest, and down into California. But we're also growing nationally. A big part of our value proposition is we trace all of our products back to the farm. And we're getting more and more interest from other places. I'll be in Overland Park, Kansas next week, for example, speaking with a group of growers out there that want to engage with us and potentially are looking if we're going to expand into these other grains, possibly siting a facility somewhere other than the Northwest. It's our desire, since our grower base is in the Northwest, to continue to expand our operations in the Northwest. But at the end of the day, it's going to be what makes the most sense. Ideally, I would like to see us site our facility in Oregon. Particularly, we are our highest interest is out in the Boardman-Port Amaro area for a lot of logistic reasons. But Pasco, right across the river, has similar logistics advantages as well. Our facility that we're planning on siting is roughly a full cost of $12 million, so small scale on the grain miller's scale of things. But of that, about $5.5 million of that's in equipment. We're putting together the financing now. Our growers, out of their own personal pockets, have put together about $1.5 million in investment, and we're building the rest of the capital stack. As we decide where and when and how, anything, particularly with this being only a five-year exemption, it helps. We know that within 3 to 5 years, our cash flows will be the place where we'll be self-standing, but anything that can help us make it to that point would be a huge benefit. Thanks, and I appreciate your time.
Do you have questions, Senator Boquist?
Two questions, one each. I guess we'll start with the last one. Does Washington provide a B&O exemption for grain?
Not that I'm aware of.
Okay, thank you. And egg question. Educate me, Kyle, or the king of eggs here. The expiring egg sunset, what is the expiring egg sunset? It was made reference earlier. There's a present some sort of egg sunset in the law that's expiring. What is that?
Senator Boquist.
Kyle's digging. I don't know if you happen to know or not.
Yeah, I can pull it up. The egg processing it did, the sunset date was June 30th, 2012. So there's that 5 years that the exemption lasts for machinery and equipment. So that's where there can still be a revenue loss. But as of right now, no new equipment placed in service is beginning the exemption phase.
And what sort of an exemption was that? Was that a permissive local exemption? How did the ag exemption work previously?
Yes, Senator. It had the same. The structure is more or less the same in the food processing, but it was a permissive one. And we did see it was in two counties. Excuse me. Primarily, it was I believe it was Marion and Clackamas County, and it was less than five accounts receiving the exemption. So it was those two counties that were allowing the exemption, although that's not to say that there's egg processing in all the other 34 counties.
And did you was Willamette involved in that? Did you utilize that tool previously?
Yes, we're actually the only egg company that has further processing equipment in the state of Oregon still. So we did. So we would actually apply to the county for that exemption, and the county never had any issue with issuing those exemptions.
Follow up, Mr. Chair. So that sort of permissive exemption did work for you in the past?
Yes, yes, it did. We used that when we put in our hard boiling, hard cooking equipment, and it was very helpful.
All right, thank you.
Further questions? All right, thank you. Tammy Denny and Roger Beyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Roger Beyer. I'm here representing the Oregon Dairy Farmers Association in support of the bill with the dash A9 amendments. Obviously, without the A9 amendments, the dairy farmers would not be affected or involved. So that's why we're here in support of the A9 amendments. So you've heard a lot about the bill already. I think you've heard some issues from the Department of Revenue dealing with maybe technical problems with the bill if you put dairy and or bakery back into it. I think that may be true for part of dairy, but for at least for the small farmers or the dairy farmers, they probably don't need the word primary taken out of the bill. Certainly, potentially, if for the the artisan cheese industry. Most of those are on-farm processing, so I think the word primary is probably okay for those also, but that may need to be looked at. Specifically, I'll tell you about a real-life example out in between Molalla and Oregon City in a small rural community of Molino. There is a dairy farmer, small dairy farmer, who would like to get into the world of selling milk products, specifically bottled milk, into the farmers' markets. That equipment is very expensive. He would have to put in a pasteurizer and a bottling line. This exemption, if it would be granted for that sort of facility, would probably be the difference between him being able to afford to do that or not. This equipment is a lot of stainless steel, a lot of refrigeration, a lot of heat involved. It doesn't take long to get to $100,000 of investment to get that kind of facility up and running. And without an exemption like this, he probably won't be able to make it happen, and he'll have to continue milking. I think he milks between 150 and 200 cows right now. He will use a small part of that, part of his milk, to go into that farmer's market value-added processing. It's what he would like to do with his farm in order to continue working forward. Without an exemption like this, he won't be able to do that. He'll continue to sell milk to Dairy Gold or one of the large processors, and just exist in that world. So that's a real-life example for what this could mean and how it could help at that level in the dairy world. So with that, Tammy Denny is here from the Oregon Dairy Farmers Association. I think she has some other comments. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Tammy Denny. I am the Assistant Director for the Oregon Dairy Farmers Association. We're playing a little bit of catch-up as an association on this particular bill. We're here today to speak in favor of the -A9 amendment and letting you know that our phone lines lit up yesterday late afternoon from some of our processors, including Umpqua Dairy and others, and our president, Chris Eggert from Pacific Foods, was unable to join us at the last moment today to speak in favor of this amendment as well. But we have our processors who are serving our 240 dairy farm families in the state who are very interested in the language that now is contained or could be contained in the -A9 amendment. So thank you so much for your willingness to consider the -A9s. Our industry needs whatever assistance we can provide. The dairy farmers of Oregon appreciate every opportunity to have a place to deliver their fluid milk and have it processed, and those family operations are always looking for an opportunity for market expansion and delivery points of delivery. So thank you so much for your consideration today, and we do speak in favor of the -A9 amendments.
Great. Questions?
Both. Thank you.
Jenny Dressel. Chris Eggert.
Chris didn't make it.
They couldn't make it?
Chris.
Huh. Chris Eggert couldn't make it.
No, Mr. Chair, don't make comments.
I I'm sure he's never heard that one before. Thank you.
Thank you. Chair Haas, members of the committee, my name is Jenny Dressler, and I represent the Oregon Farm Bureau. Oregon Farm Bureau is the state's largest agricultural association, representing over 7,000 farming and ranching families and 60,000 members statewide. Oregon Farm Bureau supports the -A9 amendments today to House Bill 3125. Our producers operate on a tight margin and need food processors in the state to keep our costs down and to remain viable. As you heard today, farmers and food processors have a symbiotic relationship. We support our processor industry, and we need them close by so we can get our products to market. This personal property tax exemption helps our processors remain competitive and helps us remain competitive. Farm Bureau encourages you to adopt the -A9 amendments, which would add bakery products, dairy products, and eggs to this to the exemption. Thank you.
Questions?
No question. Thank you.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. I do believe that completes our list here of people who have signed up to testify on 3125A and the -9 amendments. So thank you. We're going to continue looking at this bill, and I think that clears our calendar. We are up for tomorrow in a regular Thursday.
Not at this point.
Yeah.
There's nothing joint left to discuss, Mr. Chair.
No. I mean for our committee. Yes.
So no meeting tomorrow?
We have nothing posted.
Doesn't mean there isn't.
We're on a one-hour notice, so we won't say for sure, but
I'll make sure I have my cell phone off.
We are adjourned.